Hello and welcome not to the Captain's Log, because we're not talking about Star Trek this week, but this week welcome to Mark and Eddie vent their frustrations with both the latest Ghostbusters movie and the franchise as a whole, I guess.
Yes, because if there's something the internet needs more of, it's white guys in their 30s opinions about Ghostbusters.
I think Ghostbusters, other than Star Trek, which we don't talk about that much, is probably the subject we've talked about the second most.
Yeah.
It probably goes Star Trek, Ghostbusters, and then weirdly the Holocaust.
Which, again, is really the opinions of most 35-year-old white men on the internet. Star Trek didn't happen. etc. Yeah, probably, man. I mean, if you don't know me in real life, if we just have a parasocial relationship, hello, how are you? I'm not like this in real life. I'm kind of like this, but not all the way like this. It's a persona thing. So I think what you might know about me is that I am fucking obsessed with Ghostbusters, and by Ghostbusters, I'm kind of schizophrenic on it, because I really like that first Ghostbusters movie is a perfect film. It's my favorite film of all time. I don't think anything else will ever even come close, and then the other ones are whatever.
I want to point out that this is an audio format, so I want to let the people at home know what I see every time we record an episode of this podcast, which is I see Mark's face over Skype, and on the wall behind Mark, I see the Japanese Ghostbusters poster that he's got, the proton pack that he's got, and I believe that's the newspaper you've got from Ghostbusters framed, is that?
Oh no, that's from Back to the Future too. Oh,
okay, Back to the Future, sorry, yeah. But yeah, and we went to Mark's wedding in Ecto-1. Mark, I will say this, I am not as obsessed with Ghostbusters as Mark is, but I do recognise that Ghostbusters, the original 1984 movie, is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah.
To the point where I genuinely, when people talk about how Bill Murray should have won an Oscar for Lost in Translation, no, Bill Murray should have won an Oscar for fucking Ghostbusters. what? I don't know what movie won Best Movie in 1984.
I don't.
But
care.
I know Ghostbusters came out that year. I just can't wait. And whatever movie won the Oscar has not had the cultural impact of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, there's another statistic that annoys me. I never get to have this conversation with real people because they won't speak to me very long after this. But so 1980, Ghostbusters came out in 1984, and immediately became the highest grossing comedy of all time. However, it was overtaken by Beverly Hills Cop, which is great. Like, I love Beverly Hills Cop as well, right? But Beverly Hills Cop technically came out in 1984, and by technically, I mean by the rules of linear time. it came out in like December of 1984, but then was like this massive juggernaut hit. So it made all of its money in 1985, but it's technically the highest grossing comedy of 1984.
Yes. Yeah.
Fine, I'll concede it, but Ghostbusters made more money in 1984, fuck you.
Yeah, and I think we also need to point out that this was this is a time period where if you wanted to see a movie, you had like streaming and even VHS didn't really exist. So people want to see Ghostbusters and Beverly Hills Cop multiple times because it was the only way you could be sure of seeing it until like 5 years later when it might be on a TV channel that you had access to.
Yeah. And it might be censored. Which still is in the UK, Ghostbusters.
What do they censor out of the Ghostbusters?
Oh, all the jokes.
they present it as like, a documentary.
That is actually true. There's like bits where there isn't a punchline because the punchline has a swear in it. So like in the mayor's office, you know the bit where he says, I have seen shit that will turn you white.
Yeah,
I think he goes. I think they change it. I think they just maybe cut that bit out. I think he just goes up to the desk and goes, "I'm Winston Zedmore, Your Honor. I've only been with the company for a few weeks, but I want to tell you these things are real." And then it cuts to the next bit. So it's like,
oh right,
yeah.
my all time favorite airline edit like that is if you've ever watched Die Hard on a plane, you get
Die Hard 2.
No, you get Yippee-ki-yay Kimo Sabe for reasons that I don't understand, but that was a cheat code in Die Hard Arcade, so but yeah, so we both agree Ghostbusters 1 is as close to perfect a movie as you can get,
which is really bizarre, right? Because it's not a traditional movie. None of the characters have arcs. None of them. There isn't a single character in Ghostbusters that grows or learns about anything.
No, that's not true. They learn. Venkman learns that ghosts are definitively real. That's it. That's the only bit of learning or growth that happens with any character.
And that happens in the first 4 minutes. And he immediately buys it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Every other character, other than Venkman, from 5 minutes later, enters the story the exact same as the Exeter. It's perfect. It's so bizarre. I love it. And we'll kind of get into this as we go along the timeline. I love Ghostbusters for two reasons. Number one is the ideas, right? Like the ideas of just like being an exterminator for ghosts. The equipment, I've got a proton pack on my wall, I know how that shit works, like, that stuff is so compelling to me, and, like, just the idea of these schlubby exterminators, but for cosmic horrors, but also they just kind of hate doing it, and, like, they're like, oh, I don't know about this, and tell them about the Twinkie and all that shit, that stuff's great. The other reason is that I think Ghostbusters is one of, not the, but I think it's one of the funniest movies ever made.
Yeah.
The comedy in it is absolutely spotless. The one-liners, the tone of it all, like, there's every joke in Ghostbusters is my favourite joke. The one that I've kind of rediscovered recently, because I had to put a self-imposed limit on how often I could watch Ghostbusters. I'm only allowed, really, to watch it on my birthday or if I find myself in a circumstance where I can't avoid it. Because otherwise I would watch that film once a week. But it's the bit where they're in the ballroom and Egon says, oh, wait, there's something very important I forgot to tell you. Don't cross the streams. And Venkman, just the look on his face, and he goes, why? Because it would be bad. Well, I'm fuzzy on the whole good-bad thing. What do you mean bad? Try to imagine all life as you know it, stopping instantaneously, and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light. And then there's a bit where Venkman turns to Ray, and he goes, right, okay, well, that's bad. Okay, important safety tip, thanks, Egon. And it's the way that he says important safety tip, thanks, Egon, that Bill Murray sells it so well.
That's why Ghostbusters is great, because everything about that joke is funny. Like the idea that, first of all, Venkman has created a device that could wipe out all life on in the universe, that's funny. The fact that he's at no point decided to mention this to the other people he's with, right? That's funny. When they're testing it, they've already got, not even had the first, it's not even like they're testing it in like a back room. They've already got straps on their backs. They're at the hotel. And that's when Venkman goes, oh, I forgot to mention this.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, what Ghostbusters did was so groundbreaking that it's become weirdly the template for everything now. People complain about it, like that Marvel thing of where, like, oh, we've had a serious moment and it's undercut with a quip. Nobody's done it as well, but everybody is basically, they won't admit that they're attempting to copy what Ghostbusters was doing.
Yeah.
And the thing about Ghostbusters as well, what makes it so good is, and this is a direct line that I'm quoting from Jay from Red Letter Media, which is like, everything is taken 100% seriously, which is what makes it even funnier that Bill Murray refuses to give a shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's iconic. Like the effect that Ghostbusters has had. I'm a huge fanboy, so obviously I'm going to talk like this. But the effect that Ghostbusters has had on not only pop culture, but on the real world is actually quite massive, and people don't think about it. I think my love of Ghostbusters and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from my childhood has really elevated this. I love New York City. Like, I love New York City so much, they should make t-shirts. It's my favourite city. I love being there. It feels so magical to me. New York City in the 80s, and if we have any New Yorkers listening in there who are older than us, why? They will tell you that, like, New York in the 80s was like a shithole. Like, it was horrible. It was so undesirable. It was minging. It was disgusting. But then two things came out, which was Saturday Night Live and Ghostbusters. And those, the idea of, like, New York itself as the as a character comes from that. Like, it came from those two movies.
To sort of indicate, like, how bad New York was, I am currently reading a 1,700-page book that is an autobiography of a city planner called Robert Moses. And the book is titled Robert Moses, Power Broker, Robert Moses and the Downfall of New York City. And it is literally... He left in, like, 78, and he has ruined... It's one of those things where it's difficult to read, because if you're reading out, I hate this guy, but technically he's responsible for the birth of hip-hop. Because he refused to invest any money in Harlem.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it's like, no, it was... The movie The Warriors is only a slightly exaggerated version of what New York in the late 70s... Like, you go back and watch any old comedy movie, even old Dan Aykroyd ones. What's the one where they... Stripes.
Yeah.
They go out for a night in Times Square in that movie, and it's the most debauched, insane, porn, sex on every corner thing. And that's what New York was like. And then Ghostbusters comes along, and SNL comes along, like you say, and suddenly New York becomes a place that people kind of want to visit.
Yeah, it makes it seem cool.
Yeah, and then, and also weirdly Rudy Giuliani, but let's not dwell on that.
It's the template for a lot of things going forward. Like, even to this day, I reckon that executives are like, no, we want this to feel more Ghostbusters. Like, they have to. They have to
make jokes.
Like a team. They have to make jokes. They have to do quips. They have to do bits. Like, nothing can be serious.
And it's not only the producers. It's the fact that a lot of directors and a lot of, like, actors and writers are now adults who grew up on Ghostbusters. So it's in their DNA to do that naturally anyway. Yeah.
And spoilers for, I don't know if we're going to go through the movies sequentially, because Frozen Empire is certainly the one that I am the most angry about. spoilers. I didn't hate the 2016 one. I think it's fine. It's because it tried to do that original thing. It failed, but it tried it, and it tried it kind of correct, sort of.
Any negative feelings I have about the 2016 Ghostbusters are completely disappear when I remember that picture of the little girl dressed as a Ghostbuster meeting Christine Wigg. In costume and being so excited, and I'm like, no, that's fine. Little girls deserve to have that as much as I had that. Like, if I at, like, 6 years old had met Dan Aykroyd, I probably would have exploded. For its flaws and its problems, I will give that some slack. They tried to do something different. It's not to my tastes, but yeah, they tried.
You're trying to do something different by trying to do something the same, which is an admirable.
They tried to take the skeleton of Ghostbusters and plug in a different sense of humour.
Yeah.
A different way of telling jokes. And that's one way you can go.
Yeah. So Ghostbusters, obviously, we'll put it on this giant pedestal over here. And every now and again, we'll sort of look back and just bow at it reverently.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is going to be 3 hours long if we talk about everything that we love about that original movie. So let's get on to the far lesser sequels. Ghostbusters 2 took 5 years to come out.
Yeah.
As weirdly, and there's a lot of parallels between this and another movie, Men in Black 2, Ghostbusters 2 is the Men in Black 2 of the Ghostbusters series, as Men in Black 2 is the Ghostbusters 2 of the Men in Black series. But neither of those are the Too Fast, Too Furious, because you know what? Too Fast, Too Furious has a lot of merit.
Too Fast, Too Furious is how Vin Diesel got back the rights to the Riddick character as well. So that's, that's absolutely fine. No problem with Too Fast, Too Furious.
So Ghostbusters 2 basically came out. They wanted to replicate that success because, again, like, Ghostbusters was a cultural phenomenon. I mean, it wasn't just the movie. It was the merchandise. It was the series. And it was, of course, and we would be remiss... It was the song.
But I want to say something. What I think, and this is just ties in, I had this sort of epiphany about Ghostbusters the other day, and I think this is something that movie studio executives have missed, is that Ghostbusters was two cultural phenomenons. Because the action figures you had of Ghostbusters were not action figures of Ghostbusters the movie. They were action figures of the real Ghostbusters cartoon show. That's what drove a lot of the merchandising, the extra money that this beast generated, was generated through kids wanting. Well, it was basically they did the same thing that all TV show cartoon shows of that era was, which is it was made to sell toys.
Yeah.
So each week had a different ghost that did a different thing, and it would be in shops at the same time that, like, they'd be in the shops before the series came out.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't care about it. You'd be like, oh, these cool ghosts. And then you watch the episode and you'd be like, oh, okay, now I need that ghost for my set.
Oh, wow, Ray has a motorbike. I have to get that now. I have to get the Ecto-4, the helicopter or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and all of my toys' base has to be the Ghostbusters firehouse,
oh, which
has the holes through the roof that you could drop the slime through. Yeah, and that is what I think is a big problem that Ghostbusters the franchise is having, is that movie executives don't realise that those are two things. And if you want to recapture them, what you should be doing is making a new Ghostbusters movie and a cartoon show to sell toys. Based on, if you do that, you are trying to get the cultural phenomenon of Ghostbusters the cartoon show from just making a movie, and that won't work. That's how I feel. I feel that's why they're trying to cram so much into into these films.
Yeah.
Whereas they shouldn't. They should just do a Ghostbusters movie and then get all of those actors to voice fucking Netflix or on streaming, like an X-Men 97 type show that everyone loves.
I think they are doing that. I think they're doing a Netflix animated series.
Right.
Coming
okay.
up. There's one coming out. But so the particular... series of events that led to this massive phenomenon, right, is quite bizarre. I mean, we talk about Ghostbusters being lightning in a bottle, and that's for a few reasons. Number one, obviously, it's a really weird movie. It's a movie that no one had ever seen before. It was the first big budget sci-fi comedy, like a now ubiquitous genre of film. But what people forget about Ghostbusters, and this is what I think is really special about it, is that Ghostbusters is a movie for adults. It's made for grown-ups. It has jokes about sex in it. It has, you know what, fucking the Environmental Protection Act, like all that stuff, right? Ray gets a blowjob from a ghost.
In a scene that's only a dream sequence, but that's only in there because Dan Aykroyd fought to keep that in the script.
Yeah. It wasn't shot as a dream sequence. It was shot as a real scene where him and Winston go to this place, and then he gets the blowjob from the ghost, and then he's like, actually, do you know what? We'll leave this one. That's how that scene plays out. You can find it online. There's very little busting of ghosts in the original Ghostbusters. There's not a whole lot of it. You don't even really see much of it in the montage. You just see them carrying the smoking traps and stuff. But what was weird and what no one saw coming is that this movie that was made for adults, like, kids could not get enough of it, right? Like, the reason the real Ghostbusters exists is because of how desperate this fucking child population who saw this grown-up movie were for more. Like, they need more content. And for me, the reason why that is, like, kind of boils down to one of my, again, many reasons for loving Ghostbusters, which is that Venkman didn't believe in ghosts. He saw a ghost, he immediately believes in ghosts, right? In most stories of this ilk, there is some kid and they see something supernatural, and then all the grown-ups are like, no, it's not real, just go to bed, don't worry, it's fine. And then they need to convince everyone, and you know, and then in the end, maybe the parents are like, okay, we were wrong, you're right, there really is a werewolf at the fridge, how did we not see that, right? Ghostbusters is a film about not only adults, very smart adults who are fucking doctors and physicists who are like, yeah, ghosts are real. And you know what? We are going to stop them. Like, and you know what? Not only are we going to stop them, and this is a point from a really good essay by Movie Bob, the message of Ghostbusters, and we will get back to this when we get to fucking Frozen Empire, so keep this in mind. The message of Ghostbusters, the power fantasy of Ghostbusters, isn't that ghosts are real, and it isn't that they can be busted. It's that with the right equipment, you can bust them.
Yeah. Right? That's it. The heroes of Ghostbusters, right, let's look at Egon is smart, yeah. And so is Ray. They are both very smart people. Venkman is basically in the right place at the right time. He happens to be friends with these two people who have found this out. But let's like, Winston answers an ad in a paper.
Yeah.
And like, that's how he becomes a Ghostbuster. Like, he walks in off the street and says, I will do this, which is there's an old thing which is like, everybody's favorite superhero when they're a kid is Superman, and then you realize you're never going to be Superman and you decide this, you're going to want to be Batman. Yeah. But the thing is, you're never going to be Batman because you're already too late. You haven't started training to be Batman from the age of like six or whatever. Right? But the Ghostbusters, you can become a Ghostbuster by answering, being the only person who answered the ad. He's not even like, there's not a queue down the street. He's the only guy who applies. He literally just walks in and they're like, yeah, we're tired, we need a break, hire the guy. And that's
just,
it.
Cigarettes, just hanging. That's another thing. Everyone is smoking in that movie 100% of the time. It's amazing.
It is easier to get a job as a Ghostbuster than it is to get literally any job I have actually got in real life.
If there's a steady paycheck in it, I'll believe anything you say.
Yeah, fine. You're on board.
Right, you're great. Welcome aboard. So that's perfect. So that sort of sense that, like I say, they didn't see that coming. They'd be like, oh my God, like, kids have really taken to this. And it's because Ghostbusters doesn't speak down to kids. It's like, no, your fears are legitimate, so all you really need to beat them are the tools and the talent.
Yeah, there's not any part in Ghostbusters where they say, oh, it's a bit like if like a balloon was like, it's nothing like that, other than like maybe the Twinkie speech. Like, it's all like, oh, what we've just encountered is a phase four
free-roaming vapor. A real nasty one, too.
Yeah, now, as a kid, if you're making it for kids, you explain what all of those things mean. But if you're not making it for kids, you don't. And then I, as a kid, go, well, okay, so there are at least five classes of vapors. And vapors are one type of ghost, right? That's, so I know that, like, I can extrapolate in my head what that must mean. And it's like having a Pokemon movie that if your first encounter with Pokemon was like, oh yeah, this is Pokemon 47. And then as a kid, I'm like, oh, okay, so there's at least 47 Pokemon.
Yeah.
I wonder what those other ones are, and I can invent them in my head, right? It's that sort of thing.
And even the Twinkie speech, is the whole point of it is just, well, normally this thing would be the size of a Twinkie, but this morning, this Twinkie is the biggest Twinkie in the entire universe. I'm like, oh, I get that. I can envision a bigger Twinkie. Thanks for that, Egon. That's really helpful, actually. Good job. Like some of the part, like when Ray turns around and goes, we could be looking at a fourfold cross ship. And looking really panicked, I'm like, right, he's panicked. So, like Venkman said, oh, that's bad. We don't want that. stellar stuff. So then obviously they went, oh, fuck, we need a cartoon. We got to put this out. And like, they made so many episodes of that. That was airing daily. Like,
oh, yeah.
New episodes were coming. There's like 170 odd episodes of it, and so they brought out the cartoon. The cartoon had all the merch,
I want to go back to that. If you're doubting the cultural impact, 170 episodes. That's 100 episodes more than exist of original series Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right. That's so.
I'm gonna double check it. I'm pretty sure that's how much. It
yeah. is. And like, there were variations of that. Years later, I remember the 90s one, the Extreme Ghostbusters, that had a kid in a wheelchair and a goth chick.
Yeah,
you know, the two disabilities.
There's over 150 episodes. Oh my god. That Kylie Griffin, like, it's. I don't think there is. Maybe other than Ariel the Little Mermaid when I was fucking 3, 4, 5 years old, I don't think there has been a single bigger, like, impact on my just fancy taste. Like, Kylie Griffin is the fucking goat. She is the sexiest character in the world to my 14-year-old self.
No, yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
But all of that brings us to them. They're making a sequel that doesn't do that well because, like, it takes 5 years to come out. The zeitgeist has moved on a little bit.
Yeah.
I personally quite like Ghostbusters 2.
I quite like Ghostbusters 2. But the story of Ghostbusters 2 getting made is that obviously they had this massive hit on their hands, so the studio were like, we need another one and we need it tomorrow. And Bill Murray was like, nope. Not doing it. Fucking didn't get the Oscar. So not bothered. We didn't do Found in translation, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't do sequels. It's not happening. And eventually, from what I understand, Ramis and Aykroyd managed to come up with a script that was good enough to get Murray on board. And then the actual shooting script was way different. So that's why Bill Murray in Ghostbusters 2 just looks like he does not want to be there. And not in the same way that he does in the first one. He just feels like he really doesn't want to be there.
And not enough of not wanting to be there for it to work.
Yeah.
So, like, if Bill Murray really wants to be in your project, you get Ghostbusters. If Bill Murray really doesn't want to be in your project, you get Groundhog Day. But when you're in that middle phase, it's... Yeah.
He's just thinking about the conservatory he's going to build. Yeah, like, it's... Ghostbusters 2, I like...
It has some good ideas. It has Janosch.
And I think that... It's a shame that it isn't as good as the first one, because it is the first... It really kind of is the only one that has those two essential parts of Ghostbusters, which is the jokes and the ideas. Like, the ghost-busting in Ghostbusters 2 is way better. Like, the courtroom bust with the Scolari brothers is the best ghost-busting scene in the whole series. And just the improvement on the effects, the way that the proton streams look super realistic... the patter, like the two in the box, and all that stuff.
The Do-Ray Egon joke.
Do-Ray Egon, yeah, phenomenal, great stuff. Let Egon have a little quip, and he knows it. He's not making a mistake. He knows it's funny. But it also, it has the ideas and it has the jokes. I don't think the jokes land as well. And I think it might be because Bill Murray can't be fucked. There are some jokes in Ghostbusters 2 that are, for me, like, stellar. Like, Lois, particularly Lois Tully. Like, I don't know why you guys chose me as your lawyer. I got my law degree at night school. And Ray goes, well, that's fine, Lois. We got arrested at night. Or when he does his speech to the judge and then he turns around and Egon goes, very good, Lois. Short, but pointless.
I think the thing is as well that Ghostbusters 2, and I have a lot more affection for it now, because Ghostbusters 2 isn't trying to be Ghostbusters 1.
I fully disagree.
Well, no, what I mean is, it's definitely got a similar framework, but if you were making Ghostbusters 2, let's say if you were doing it now, Ghostbusters 2, there's no way a studio would green light that would go without you having the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in it. They'd be like, that was the big thing.
We've proven that.
Yeah.
I guess, like,
No, you can't be using slime guns. You've got to use the proton packs, but you've got to change the design slightly. so that we can sell new proton packs, but they've got to be the proton packs. Nobody wants to buy a slime gun. Like that, they were confident enough in what they were doing to go, no, this is a different situation, so the guys require a different solution. It was enough that, you know, that's personally how I feel about it. I will also point out the very funny thing of the fact that the major change between the two is that Janine is changed into the Janine from the cartoon show. Yeah, yeah. Who was the only major difference between... Like, oh, Janine's boring to draw. Yeah. We're never going to sell an action figure of Janine. What if we give her crazy glasses?
They made Janine less sexy. As the cartoon show went on, you'll notice that her hair changes and her glasses get rounder because they wanted her to appear, quote, more motherly.
Right.
Yeah, even though she is an absolute fitty in the first few episodes. J. Michael Straczynski was apparently furious about that, I think. So Ghostbusters 2, like, it probably is the closest one to the first one. I think that the problem with Ghostbusters 2 is that it's just the same story, really, like, at the tail of it. Because it's... How do you do a Ghostbusters story? I mean, famously, Dan Aykroyd wrote an unfilmable script, an unfilmable idea, and then Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis said, let's do a going-into-business story, that'll be funny. The problem is that then that really is the kind of only story that... One of the very few stories that you can do is, like, have them be at rock bottom again and then build back up and then fight some supernatural...
Yeah,
villain at the end, like that just has to be the plot. But you know,
I have ideas about how you could do a Ghostbusters movie now, which we'll talk about at the end. But yeah, that this happens, doesn't do that well. Big gap, and what happened in that big gap is that every movie studio became desperate to have a incredibly bankable franchise, and Sony only really has the rights to two. And one is Spider-Man, which is precarious because it's not actually their intellectual property to start with. They must be producing Spider-Man content. The reason Spider-Man keeps getting rebooted is if they're not making Spider-Man films, Marvel get the rights back.
Yeah.
And they have the rights to Ghostbusters. So they... That's why you've gotten to the Ghostbusters 2016 and Afterlife such quick succession, is they are desperately trying to turn this into what Paramount are doing with Star Trek.
Yeah.
They've realized they've got Star Trek, so why not put out five Star Trek shows so that you can fill up Paramount Plus? Because Sony hasn't launched a streaming service yet, because Sony doesn't have enough stuff to fill a streaming service.
No, and it recently sold Bond.
Yeah. So the people at Sony don't know how to make... And to be fair, this is the thing, you might go, oh, well, why don't they just sell off Spider-Man? And it's like, to be clear, the reason they're not selling off Spider-Man has nothing to do with the movies. It's because the Spider-Man franchise is so important to the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And so after Ghostbusters 2, which had a very lukewarm reception, although, to be fair, at the time, like, we don't think about this now, when sequels need to be bigger and better and do... more money than previous. In the 80s, that was not the prevailing theory. Like, sequels were always going to do lesser. That's just how it works. But that's why, like, Toy Story 2 was originally going to be just like this straight to VHS fucking hour long movie. So after Ghostbusters 2, we have a bit of a drought. The cartoon show wraps up, I think, in the early 90s. And then in the 90s, we get Extreme Ghostbusters, which runs for two seasons. I think it runs for about 40 episodes or so. And then that's it. And there's lots of rumours of Ghostbusters 3, and one where they go to hell, and one where hell is Manhattan, and da-da-da-da-da. And maybe Bill Murray's going to... He'll come back as long as we kill him off in the first scene, and maybe he shows up as a ghost later. Bear that in mind. Because how would that ever work? And then eventually they say we're doing Ghostbusters, we're just gonna fucking reboot it again with some new fresh talent. Everyone's gonna love it. The internet is gonna go mental for it because it's everyone's favorite SNL cast members: Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon, and we all love them. And obviously, Ghostbusters 2016 came out, and there was absolutely no negative discourse about it whatsoever. and yeah, no, obviously, the people fucking hated Ghostbusters 2016. And
yeah.
I, for years, would have said, no, it's not that Ghostbusters fans hate women. It's that the one that happened to have women in it is so bad that I can't understand, you know, like, people don't get why Ghostbusters fans aren't taken to it. Because there's no way anyone will ever release a Ghostbusters movie that's so fucking awful that everyone will just be clouded by nostalgia and just all go and see it anyway. Oh, wait a minute, then Frozen Empire happened. So I think Ghostbusters fans just hate women.
This is the thing. I would say the 2016, the discourse about it, and I'm not... This is the thing that is known fact. Sony were very deliberately sort of doing their best to make sure that the focus of any negative discourse was a conversation about misogyny. So that if you were criticising the movie, they could claim that, and so they could sort of shield the movie from genuine criticism. Right? And that's a separate thing. But this was 2016. It is now 2024, and I am more than comfortable admitting that a large section of nerd culture is frankly horrifically misogynistic,
yeah,
and needs to all fuck off and die. For example, I would like to point out the most recent, I love X-Men 97, and the discourse has shut up about it since it actually came out, but being told that people who were complaining about X-Men 97 because X-Men, when did X-Men get woke? In 1963, when it was, yeah, fucking invented, you fucking idiot who's never understood a single fucking bit of media you've ever consumed. And it's like, oh, was it so woke? Magneto is literally a Holocaust survivor, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, he's a Holocaust survivor and Malcolm X.
Yeah, and yeah, and like, this is like, that's not us reading into it. Stanley has specifically said it's Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. That's who they're based on. Like, that's the point of the yeah, that's the thing. So, like, people kicking off, oh, they've ruined Rogue because, like, her ass is too small. Yet nobody's commenting on the fact that they've made Bishop significantly less muscular and like a foot shorter. But
oh yeah,
but no, it's, and then everybody shut up the minute. How many episodes in are you?
3.
You get some very sexy Jean Grey coming up. That's all I'm gonna say.
I don't know, man. She's already had that baby, so. Are we getting more pregnant, Jean Grey?
Anyway, yeah, I'm much more comfortable admitting at this point in the discourse that nerd culture is it wasn't this misogynistic, and then the internet happened, and the people who have the worst opinions found each other and created small but loud communities.
Yeah,
and they can all fuck off and die. Yeah. I don't care.
Because, do you know what? Who cares? It like, it sucks. It didn't work. But I think the reason that it didn't work is there's this idea. There's mystique around the original Ghostbusters that a lot of it is ad-libbed, which is not accurate. I have the shooting script, and it's pretty close. There's certainly different takes. Like, they certainly would have gone, okay, so we're going to do this thing, and Bill, do you know what? We'll do one for the script, and then Bill just fucking go for it, right? On the Ultimate Collector's Blu-ray, there is an alternate cut of the original one that was shown to people before they basically put in all the special effects as, like, test footage. And it has a bunch of alternate takes in it. It has, I think there's a bit where when he comes out of the room after they catch Slimer, rather than saying, we came, we saw, we kicked its ass, he says something like, well, wasn't that a load of knockabout fun or something?
That's a good line.
Yeah. It really goes with, yeah, one of my other favourite lines, which is, well, that wasn't such a chore now, was it?
Well, that's the thing, is like, so, like, it wasn't, like, that's the thing. Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis didn't need to ad-lib that much because
they did
their, they did their ad-libbing when they were in the writer's room putting the fucking script together.
Yeah.
That's, so the ad-libbing is, like, and Ernie Hudson like, I'm not doubting Ernie Hudson's abilities as an actor, but he was very much brought on as an actor.
Yeah.
Like, his job is, I'm here to read the lines and give the best performance I can. And most of the ad-libbing is just whenever it's a case of, like, do the scene. Right, now do it again. Bill, you think you've got a funnier punchline. Do that.
Yeah,
and then we'll see which one works better. So, yeah.
Yeah, because Ernie Hudson is an ad-libbing, and he still gets the best lines in the film. So... You know that that probably isn't accurate, right? But then when Ghostbusters 2016 came around, comedy was new, right? I will die on the hill that Anchorman is one of the most important comedies ever made, because it started that new trend of sort of, it's almost like improving a movie, right? Everything's ad-libbed, yeah. and maybe Will's got a funnier bit, and maybe Paul Rudd's got something to say. And we'll try the scene, and we'll do the different scenes, and we'll just add in random jokes and the Sex Panther stuff. Fuck it, man, that sounds funny. Let's whack that in. That's why, again, there's an alternative version of Anchorman that's just cut shit. So Paul Feig, who came along on The Office, another show that is built that way and is incredible, and said, right, Ghostbusters is the original ad-lib comedy. We're going to do that again. The problem is that the editing of Ghostbusters 2016 makes it clear that what they did was just ad-lib on every single take and occasionally forget to ad-lib in when they done the reverse shots. There are some very obvious reverse shots of characters not reacting to what the last character just said because they didn't say it in the take that they filmed their reaction. Like, it's so obvious. That's why I kind of like it. That's when I say, like, they tried to do something different. They did. They tried to do something different and new in the mistaken belief that that was how the original one was done.
Paul Feig is an incredibly, from what I can tell, an incredibly nice man.
Yeah.
And also a very funny man. Like, even going back to, like, his early work on Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah,
he's a genuinely delightful and funny man, and he's done some great stuff. But there is definitely a feeling in Ghostbusters that he wasn't willing to say, "Okay, we've all had our fun. Now let's get the script, get the scene as written, because we need that. Because we need takes of bits A, B, and C to make the scene work."
Yeah,
and that's like, you know, that's one way to go. If you want to, but you know, for me it doesn't work. Your mileage might vary.
The jokes are a lot more juvenile. There's a lot of fart jokes in it. There's a lot of toilet humor.
The funniest improv in that entire movie all comes from Chris Hemsworth, who, genuinely, I just want to say, Chris Hemsworth is an incredibly frustrating man because nobody should be as good as many things as he is,
and be that handsome. Yeah, it shouldn't be allowed. He should have been put in jail.
Have you ever seen that bit of Melissa McCarthy being interviewed on Jonathan Ross about him, and he starts singing on set and she just growls at him? She's like, "No, you shut up. How dare you be good at singing?"
Fantastic. And that movie came out and I saw it. I think I saw it twice and I was like, do you know what? It's not very good, but it is Ghostbusters. I've been waiting almost my entire life, because the second one came out in 1989, to see a new ghost get busted on screen, and it happened, and it's... Who gives a shit? They're not going to do any other ones. There's two versions of the theme tune that came out of that movie, which are actually pretty fucking great. There's one by Walk the Moon, which is quite fun, and there's another one that they released to advertise the movie in Japan, sung by some J-pop girl group, and it's phenomenal. You should listen to it. Look up Japanese Ghostbuster theme later. It's great.
But it didn't make $1 billion.
No,
that's what Sony want. So we go back to the well. New idea. Harold Ramis has died.
Yeah.
Ivan Reitman's son wants to have a crack at Ghostbusters. Right. He's one of the few people in the world who probably calls Bill Murray Uncle Bill and can therefore make that phone call and get him to agree to do it to help him out. And plus, all of Bill Murray's bad feelings about not making up with Harold Ramis lead you to the production of Ghostbusters Afterlife, which is a nostalgia-soaked love letter to the original Ghostbusters, even in ways that don't make sense.
Yeah, so there's a story that Kevin Smith tells about... So Ghostbusters Afterlife came out of nowhere. Like, they literally filmed a teaser for it. It's the teaser with the barn.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear the sort of creepy piano music from the hotel, mm-hmm. and it zooms into the barn, and it tracks into the barn, and then you see the car covered in a tarp, and the tarp blows up, and you see the Ghostbusters logo, and then you hear a proton pack turning on. And that was it. Well, no one knew that was happening, and the internet fucking lost its nut. And Kevin Smith tells a story about how he went to see Jason Reitman, and he said, yeah, that trailer's dope, man, so you're doing another Ghostbusters? And Jason Reitman's like, yeah. And Kevin Smith says, that's crazy, though. How are you going to do it without Bill Murray? Like, you must have all those guys on board, right? And, like, this was before anyone had said anything, and he was like, yeah, no, it would be crazy to do it without them on board. Yeah, you're right, yeah. And then that was it. He just left him. That was like, right, okay. So, yeah, he's definitely got Bill on board. He's definitely got the boys on board. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we got is, like I say, a love letter to Ghostbusters that is also... makes Egon a deadbeat dad, has the Stave Puff Marshmallow Man come back, even though it makes literally no sense. Like, the Stave Puff Marshmallow Man, it doesn't make sense for it to ever reappear. It is a punchline to a gag that only works because it's... Unless Gozer thinks all humans are scared of marshmallow men.
So the video game is questionably canon. Because they did release Ghostbusters, the video game, which we sort of skipped over. That was in 2009. And that was... The original cast all came back to do the voices, except Bill Murray, who did it on his own, and you can tell. And it was a new story. It was all about Gozer again. But Ray posits that the reason that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man keeps coming back is that once Gozer is chosen a form in a dimension, it has to stay in that form.
Right, okay.
That's the form of the Destructor.
And I will say this, Ghostbusters the game, worth getting your hands on just for the special feature where they show Dan Aykroyd the restored Ecto-1.
Yeah.
Where Dan Aykroyd walks around it and breaks down what all of the bits do.
What the bits do, yeah.
Because he's worked out the science of this. Because, and I feel we haven't mentioned this yet, Dan Aykroyd is insane.
Oh, yeah. When we were watching Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, you know the bit at the start when they're chasing the sewer dragon and the white thing on the top of Ecto-1 opens up and the drone flies out? Laura said she could audibly hear me whispering to myself, that's not what that thing does. Yeah. So Afterlife, like, I adored Afterlife. I really liked Afterlife. I still really like Afterlife. For me, it's 1, 2, Afterlife, then 2016, and then Frozen Empire. Way out there.
Yeah.
But Afterlife, it was kind of, as you say, it was a bit of a love letter to the fans.
Yeah,
I get why people don't really like it. They tried to, you know, Stranger Things came out and they tried to incorporate that and they even got one of the stars. Finn Wolfhard's great in it, that's fine. The idea of legacy is fun. I feel like, though, Afterlife isn't very funny.
No, it's not a comedy movie, and I don't know that a Ghostbusters sequel necessarily has to be a comedy, but if it's not going to be a comedy, then you have to make it not a comedy. And Afterlife feels like it's trying to be funny. Let's put it this way. You don't make a movie that you're not making a comedy and then cast Paul Rudd. That's where I come from. Fun. Yeah. So all of this brings us to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, a movie... that I think I would be fair to say that I find so, so frustrating because of two things. One, there are three separate good ideas for a Ghostbusters movie being ruined in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And two, it was clearly written to be a series on streaming, to the point where I can tell you specifically where the ends of certain episodes are.
Yeah.
Egon's granddaughter playing chess with the ghost in the park, that is the end of episode one. Mm-hmm. The end, there's a bit later on where you find out the ghost is going to betray, the ghost, her ghost girlfriend is going to betray her. That is the end of, that is probably the end of episode three or four, yeah.
Yeah,
it's so irritating.
Yeah, and for me, the most egregious thing about it, because we'll just skip to the fucking end, right? Spoilers for Frozen Empire all over the show. The thing for me, because I think all the way through, I was like, fine, this is just another bad Ghostbusters movie. Whatever, there'll be some interesting tech in it, there'll be some interesting ideas, there'll be some interesting additions to the canon. And the bit that I was like, oh, I feel... Not only do I feel that Gil Keenan completely misunderstands the appeal of the original source material, I feel like he might have actively gone out of his way to fucking betray that idea. Which is this new character, who played by Kumail Nanjiani, who, give him his props, is funny in it. Like, he, the couple of times that I laughed in this movie was at Kumail.
Yeah, Kumail Nanjiani is, he seems to be, this is a weird thing to say, because I don't want to have a go at James Acaster, because I've heard him being interviewed about it. What I want to say is, Kumail Nanjiani is obviously absolutely delighted to be in a Ghostbusters movie, but also confident enough to push himself to give a performance slightly against direction. Whereas I think James Acaster was incredibly happy to be involved in this movie and therefore maybe a little scared to push to make changes. Because James Acaster seems very weighty. Like, there is a... If you are making a Ghostbusters movie, fucking... After you've filmed your scene, you say, James, do you have what you think might be a funnier punchline for this? And we'll take another shot. Yeah. That's where you ad-lib with James fucking Acaster.
Exactly. And, like, and Kumail as well. Like, the scene where he's, like, sitting across from Bill Murray, he's holding his own. Kumail is as funny as Bill Murray. That's... unheard of. That's ridiculous. But his character is, he's part of an ancient lineage of people who can control fire.
Yeah.
Because the ghost back in ancient times was captured by four guys who could control fire and trapped in a little box. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. Oh, we had these ancient Ghostbusters. Whatever. That's cool. But he is then an essential part of defeating the fucking ghost.
Yes.
Ghostbusters should not be about people with magic powers. Ghostbusters should be about how you, if you're afraid of ghosts, can pick up a fucking proton pack and go to town on it. That's it. Ghostbusters, like, the creatures in Ghostbusters are fucking terrifying. Like, they could be legitimate horror movie baddies in other movies. The appeal of the idea and the comedy is that these horrifying things exist and then these fucking schlubby idiots show up, take care of it, and then argue about what they're going to have for lunch.
Right. But in addition to Kumail Nanjiani's whole arc, that's also not what kills the bad guy, because the bad guy is also taken down by another storyline that they wanted to do, which is... that Egon's granddaughter is the only person who could possibly be smart enough to work this out. So she's coated the parts of her fucking proton pack in brass.
Yeah.
So that will stop it as well. And also, even though she's done this and worked this out, she hasn't done this to anybody else's proton packs. So that you've got another, you are the chosen one, you are Egon's granddaughter, you can do this, happening simultaneously. So that you've got two separate... complete misunderstandings of the appeal of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so
that also
in the trailers, and one of the reasons I was so excited about it, and another reason I felt fucking betrayed by the cash cow that was this film, the cash grab, is that in the trailers we see, like, again, I have a proton pack on my wall. I am intimately familiar with how a proton pack works and exactly what it looks like. And when you watch that trailer, you notice there are new things on the proton pack, right? There's new bits, some of the stuff has been improved, and that makes me ask, ooh, why? Why do you have to take a perfect piece of equipment and improve it? Is it maybe because you come up against the ghost, your equipment falls short, and then someone goes off and cleverly fucking comes up with like what they need to do to fight this thing? That's the Star Trek rules. Smart people solving problems. But in the movie, James A. Kirk at one point just shows up with a van, opens up and goes, here's your new stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't explain what any of it does.
So
doesn't explain why it has to be yellow.
So to break this down, the three movies that are trying to happen in Ghostbusters, they are trying. There is a story where of the new the family from the original Ghostbusters, from Ghostbusters Afterlife, are now in New York. They're in the fire station. Paul Rudd is dealing with the fact that he's a stepfather. The young kid is dealing with the fact that she may be too young to be a Ghostbuster, and Finn Wolfhard is. This is the problem. If you are telling that story, you can come up with a good plot line for Finn Wolfhard's character. But actually, what we've done is had to find something for Finn Wolfhard to do.
They literally took a deleted storyline from Ghostbusters 2 and gave it to Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah. Then there is a story about a founding of a new group of Ghostbusters in New York dealing with Finn. That's another story. And then there is a story of which is the story that's got Ernie Hudson's new Ghostbusters facility.
Yeah.
Then there is the story of the Ghostbusters having to come out of retirement to fight a bad guy. And so, but those are three different movies.
Yeah.
So pick one. There are. I felt a lot about this. Have you seen the last Jurassic Park movie? Last Jurassic World 3?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So you know how they've got their all new cast of characters and they've got the legacy characters?
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, they're leaving in the helicopter. And I laughed in the cinema because I realised at that point there are like 15 named characters in that helicopter leaving. And I've just watched a Jurassic Park movie where no one fucking died.
Yeah.
Right?
And do you remember when they introduced sexy Lady Indiana Jones, like, fucking jungle smuggler pirate, and I'm like,
yeah,
you're one of the coolest characters I've ever seen. Why the fuck are you in this movie?
Yeah, and that's the thing. So like, this is the problem, that by the end of, like, if you've seen the poster for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, there are, I'd say, 12 maybe 13 people on that all dressed as Ghostbusters, which is too many.
Yeah,
right. I don't Podcast was a good comedy character for Ghostbusters Afterlife. I don't need him to be in this movie. I don't need Finn Wolfhard's love interest to be in this movie. I'm not saying don't give actors work, but I don't care. If we're not in the same small town with the same cast of characters again, why are these people here?
So, with Lucky in particular, and I'm going to put respect on her name. Her name is Lucky because she's one of my favourite Ghostbusters. Lucky's thing, right? Lucky's shtick, which is so good that I almost think it's accidental on the part of Gil Keenan for Frozen Empire, is that in Afterlife, she's working at the restaurant, she finds out about ghostbusting, she's like, actually, that sounds pretty cool. She gets on that. She, like, the only time we really see her doing anything is when they get back to the farm, and she kicks down the door, sees Gozer, and then just starts firing, because fuck it, shoot first, ask questions later. That is pure Ghostbusters. She is an absolute badass. And the second one, in the Frozen Empire, they do that again. Garaka gets out. She immediately throws down a trap. She's like, right, fuck you, asshole. Tries to get it, and that's when the equipment doesn't work. Great. Like, put in a cool, fun female character who is a badass. That is a thing we've never seen in Ghostbusters before. And they just don't do anything with her. They give her nothing to do.
This movie is, it's also, and this is where I felt like I was going insane in the cinema. Because this movie is, I would say, 20 minutes to half an hour too long. And it is also nearly entirely exposition, as you are trying to explain a million different things to me. And yet, I am certain there are 40 minutes missing from this movie.
Yeah.
And I will sum it up, at the beginning of the movie, they're chasing a ghost through New York. They go past a cop car with two cops in it. And the cops see them. One of them goes, should we do this? And he sees the other one sees the ghost and goes, no, they've got this.
Yeah.
Right? At the end of the movie, we see those two cops again in the car, freezing to death. Right? That is a payoff for a joke that requires us to see the cops a second time in the middle of the movie. They should be at the beginning of the movie, the end of the movie, and they should be appearing in the middle of the movie. That is the fucking rule of threes. That is how comedy works.
Yeah.
Right? But they're not. And then James Acaster turns up at the end of the movie and he's soaking wet for no reason.
Yeah.
So there's definitely like 10, 20 minutes of his character that's completely just cut out. It's all cut out so we can have Bill Murray come back in a triumphant return. But the problem with that is that Bill Murray's already been in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Right. Oh.
For Ghostbusters Afterlife, there's a scene as well there's a behind the scenes sort of story. In Ghostbusters Afterlife, they chase Muncher, the new ghost. You always have to have that second act trap, right?
Yeah.
So right at the start of the second act, they go after Muncher and they trap it using the gunner seat on the Ecto-1 and like the little RC trap. And the reason they did that is that Jason Reitman said, thus far, ghostbusting has been a very stationary activity. Like, it's just a couple of guys standing in a room, they shoot at the thing and then they put it in the box. So we are going to give ghostbusting like a kind of dynamic, kind of kinetic sense to it. They're going to chase it in the car. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I guess I've never seen that before. That's fun. When the Frozen Empire opens with the exact same thing, I'm like, no, this is dumb. Because if you have to chase it in the car, you're essentially telling me that the proton streams don't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, the proton streams are for wrangling. The ghost is trying to go away, and you pull it back. That's the fucking point of the lasso of the proton pack. If you're just driving after it and shooting, what are you doing? You're not holding it still. Which I'm like, right, okay. But then he goes the fucking opposite, and the finale is 56 people stood side by side in a room shooting at the same thing. What's that?
Everything I don't like about this movie can be summed up in this, which is the mayor of New York, Mark, in this movie, is our good friend from the EPA in the first movie. I get, from a marketing perspective, why you do that.
Yeah.
In-universe, the man who deactivated a ghost trap and released Gozer over New York City doesn't have a chance of successfully running for mayor.
Ghostbusters 2 kind of whitewashes it because they're like, we got sued by everyone. Which is a funny joke in itself, but they could also have come out and been like, yeah, Walter Peck turned off the fucking containment unit.
Yeah.
Like, and then that again is another fucking thing that they approach in this movie, which is that, look, there's lots of ghosts in New York. We have to put them somewhere. And it's better if we take care of it and put it into our containment unit. And then it's that thing of like, well, the first time that Walter Peck shut it off, it became like a doorway to another dimension, which, great, cool, that's fine. I'll take that. That's an interesting piece of lore. And then Winston is like, yeah, well, when we built it in the 80s, we didn't think we would need to put this many ghosts in it for this long. So we've created this new containment unit over here that's like 100 times the size. This will hold every ghost on Earth, like no problem. It's great. It's fucking out of the way. No one has to worry about it. We're going to have to start transferring over from the old stuff to the new stuff, which I'm like, oh, very good. A metaphor about passing the torch. How fun. And then Lucky's like, if we did it like one trap at a time, it would take us whatever 15 years or whatever, right? That could be the plot of a fucking movie on its own.
The ghost at the end of this movie gets sucked into the trap, which is busted open, and it gets trapped inside because, right, obviously that trap has been busted open, so it doesn't close in doors. It closes because the ghost tries to grab the edge of it and pulls it closed behind him.
Yeah.
Fuck. All the way off.
We have rules for how these things work. Like, they don't trap Gozer at the start at the fucking in the first one, but that's because they've set up, well, if you cross the streams, it reverses particle flow. So they're coming through that dimensional gate. If we cross, they don't shoot Gozer. They shoot the gate.
Yeah.
The gate then retracts and fucking Gozer goes back into it. And that's how they solve that problem. They don't have to trap it. They trap Gozer at the end of Afterlife in the trap field. That was pretty cool. That was interesting. I've never seen that before. So now, so Gozer is in the containment unit? And then Frozen Empire just... I know we fucking said, please can we not do Gozer again? But also, can you please explain to us how Gozer didn't... Well, actually, maybe Winston put Gozer in the new containment unit.
But okay.
Oh, but there wasn't a fucking line to tell us that. So it'd be just terrible. Awful.
Let me tell you why I found the most frustrating about this movie. This movie has in it Patton Oswalt,
yeah,
Paul Rudd, Kumail Nanjiani, and James Acaster. So why aren't they just the Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Why can't you do a plot where Paul Rudd has like decided he wants to be a Ghostbuster now? Him and the family have moved back to New York. They're not Ghostbusters. The wife isn't doing it. She's trying to go. Finn's maybe like their intern, Finn Wolfhard's character. And then you've got the young girl who's like super smart, but she's too young to be a Ghostbuster.
So and she meanwhile, works in the fucking engineering corps.
Yeah. So, and meanwhile, the Ghostbusters Paul Rudd has joined is him. You make James Acaster your Egon,
yeah.
Kumail Nanjiani your Venkman, and Patton Oswalt your Ray, and boom.
Yeah, you've done it. There's four of them. That's it. Yeah, that's what this movie should have been, and it just wasn't, and it's so frustrating.
Do you know? This is what I was thinking. Is like, how would I if I was given. Like, if I was given the opportunity to make a Ghostbusters movie, how would I do it? Because I've been thinking about this. And I realised I know exactly what I'd do. Because there's already a group of people that exist who are perfect for this. So you get the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia guys. Right? And right. You get them to do a movie where the first 10 minutes is this bunch of, like, sleazy Chicago scam artists. All right, and they're doing everything to like rip people off, take money from them. Like they're just doing the worst absolute shit. And at the end of that 10-15 minutes, they're pulling all their money and they're using it to buy themselves a Ghostbusters franchise.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get your only fucking use of the old Ghostbusters is that you have Bill Murray turn up on an instructional video.
Right? And Winston is sort of their liaison.
Yeah, that's as much as you do. Like, right. They and then you set it up, and then they find out that what they're running is not an actual scam, which they thought they were. They thought it was like they find out it's real, and then by the end of the movie, those assholes have to save the universe. That's that's the plot of your fucking Ghostbusters movie. You set it in Chicago because it's a different city. Boom. There's tons of stuff you can do with like. I want at some point, like, they like in the early stages, they rip off a mob boss. The mob boss dies. Halfway through the movie, the mob boss ghost comes back, and now they have to try and repay him. Like he comes back from the dead as a ghost, and he's like, oh, no, I can just keep being a mob boss.
Yeah.
But as an evil ghost. That like, something like that is what I would do.
And do you know what would be funny? And I mean, this would maybe throw the pace in a little bit, but the funny thing about that payoff is just have them come in and immediately bust them.
Yeah, have them try and scare them, and then they're just like, oh, hang on a minute, you're dead already.
Yeah. Boom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this movie feels so much like somebody's, like you're saying they're doing a series for streaming, this feels like this was the script for their first series on streaming. And then they were told, I'll make that a movie, and then they cut it down, they filmed it, and it came out 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I just, like, Ray... And is it, like Ray jumping around finding like the mystery of this ghost who's disappeared seems to be a completely different movie from everybody else. I just
and the idea of Emily is I can't remember what her character's name was, but Emily Lynn's like that sort of the teenage ghost, the sort of ghost in her early 20s who died in the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, I think people have, which is a cool little piece of New York, a very tragic piece of New York lore, but kind of a little nice little addition. That idea of like that could be interesting in itself. Not all ghosts can't be trusted. Do you know what I mean? Like there's some ghosts that are friendly,
and then she can't be trusted.
Yeah, then she can't be trusted. Exactly.
Also, if you're a ghost, if you manage to leave your body and become a ghost, Mark, your body still moves when you talk. Not when you walk around. not when you're doing all of that stuff, then your body's dead. But just talking specifically, your lips will move.
Yeah.
I just... Oh! Oh, it's just...
Like, she could have been... would have been a more interesting main villain. Because then we could go into that thing of, well, yeah, sometimes ghosts do appear as just the like the person that they were. But you know what? Sometimes they also appear as these weird monsters.
Yeah.
And we can't take that risk. They've all got to go in the box.
Or you go the complete other way, which is you don't even have her appear as if she's a ghost. So she's just a normal human character, and then fucking midpoint of the movie we get that reveal where she disappears all of a sudden. You're like, oh no, she's a ghost. You shouldn't be trusting her.
Yeah,
But, yeah, it's just nonsense.
And that stupid thing of, like, oh, Garaka needs a human voice to say the words to open the orb. So we'll let Phoebe become a ghost using a machine that's to take spirits out of possessed objects. Again, interesting. Like,
a machine that lets you become a ghost and then become human again is literally the plot of Casper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so frustrating. It's so irritating. Because, like I say, it's a lot of good ideas completely wasted on this absolute nonsense. Like, I'll give you an example of how I know this was based on a TV series. This was written to be a TV series. There is an absolutely fucking terrifying ghost in this movie. It is in a room. You don't see how it got caught. You don't see how it got put in the room. And then the containment in the room goes down and it looks like it's going to come out. And then we never fucking see it again.
Yeah. That thing was terrifying.
That was clearly an entire... What's happened there is the people who wrote the original script for this as a series have written that in, and it is the best episode of the series they've written.
Yeah.
And then they were told, oh, compress this down for a movie. And they're like, okay, as much as we love this episode, this is standalone. This can go. But I just don't want to get rid of the ghost I came up with. So we're going to put it in for no reason.
Because that episode should be the horror episode. Do you know what I mean? Like the real genuinely terrifying one, because it gets out, it goes back to where it came from, it starts fucking people up, it starts haunting people, it's really terrifying, it's really horrible. And then the comedy...
Lucky has to deal with it, but she's not got a proton pack, so she's genuinely getting like haunted by the ghost. She's trying to get out so she can get...
That's like your second act. But then your third act, and where the kind of jokes would come from, I imagine, in that episode, would basically be from this idea. And you wouldn't say this, but this would be the idea of being like, well, we caught it before, so we just catch it again. Do you know what I mean? Like, we already had it. Sorry it got out. That was a mistake, but... We don't need to be scared of these things as long as we have the tools and the talent.
Yeah, to be fair as well, I should point out, we haven't mentioned this. The ghost in this, the big bad ghost, its whole thing is it can control all ghosts and make them do whatever it wants. Even though it can do that and take control of you, it is still having conversations with one of the girls. The girl who's a ghost is having conversations with her about... making her do stuff, even though it doesn't need to, because it has full control over her.
Yeah.
I don't know what this movie's supposed to be.
No. I don't know what point it is trying to make at any time.
No. A great example, like, it's of being cut down. What Janine has a gut, like, gets put in Ghostbusters gear for the first time in this movie, and she's got a little, like, arm-mounted... I don't know what it does. It's never used. It doesn't at any point get fired. So what was the point of that? Is it to sell another toy? Kids are only going to want to buy the toy if the thing does a cool thing in the movie. Like, there's some ideas in this, like having a little a quadricopter drone trap. Very clever.
Yeah.
Like that. Brilliant idea. It's just like I say, it's one of those rule of threes. Establish it exists, show it's working, use it at the final, and no, it doesn't do any of those things.
Yeah.
Oh.
Awful.
It's an awful movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't keep making them. Like, but just don't let... Just do it again. And just be like, right, do you know, if we find out that Frozen Empire is what we needed to get to Kumail, Patton, Rudd and Acast are being the new Ghostbusters. And they do that movie. And then just at some point have someone go, oh, yeah, that thing about him having fire powers, that was a gas leak. Like, just fucking season four of Community.
When Camille is talking to Bill Murray, and he has on the exact same hat that Lewis has in Ghostbusters 1, that was when I completely gave up on this movie. that was when I was like, you... Okay, here's the problem. Here's a genuine thing. I think if Sony, if you're listening to this, which I know you are, you're monitoring everything with AI. But if you are listening to this, I just need you to understand, if you want to repeat everything for nostalgia, that's fine. You can get away with doing that in some movies. But repetition kills jokes.
Yeah.
So you can't really do it with a comedy. Unless you've got a variation on it, and him just having the same hat on isn't that. Oh god.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to go to what now? I'm real sad.
Yeah. So am I. Also, I'm just gonna say this, if you have having the lion come to life can fuck off, just because it's a well-known shot from the first movie. And also,
you know, the library ghost shows up again.
What, here's what would have been great: if when they'd gone to the library and Ray said, oh, well, we need to go to the library, I need to talk to somebody I know, if that had been the ghost,
yeah,
and like she works, she's out, if you don't try and grab her and you obey the rules of the library, she's actually a very useful resource.
Yeah,
that would be a great gag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like having to explain, like, just be to the other people you're with, be quiet, or she'll turn into a raging psychopathic monster ghost to try and kill you. Oh.
She knows every book in here. She's more useful than the actual librarians, who are heroes.
Yeah.
Just want to let that be known. I love librarians.
But no, what it is the library has a secret library underneath it.
Yeah.
Mark. Because this movie's better than the original Ghostbusters movie. The original Ghostbusters movie, you just went down into the basement of the library, which is probably real, but you didn't go to the secret library where all the secrets are kept by Patton fucking Oswalt.
great gag. He's the secret keeper. Fantastic. Why not? Oh, no. I'll just waste it. Yeah.
Patton Oswalt, who doesn't believe in ghosts, by the way. I should establish that. He's not in on all this secret stuff. He's just in a basement for no fucking reason.
Yeah, even though he works in a building with a famous ghost. That apparently you'll just come upon.
Which
all the time.
Dan Aykroyd walks past on his... that's the problem. It's all like, I want to do this reference, but I haven't in any way thought through what this would mean. From the plot of making a film.
There is a joke that they missed, which is that we see the library ghost, and then podcast is like, wait, isn't that the library? Why didn't you come back and get her? And then Ray can be like, well, no one ever paid us to.
Yeah. Or have Ray just go, well, no, we can't fly the proton packs down here.
Yeah.
It's too much paper.
Yeah, the library wouldn't let us. Yeah. The library wouldn't let us is so much funnier. Yeah.
See, we've come up with a better joke in that in 30 seconds because we actually gave some fucking thought to the concept of why is that ghost still there?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, look, thing, you know. Ugh.
Garbage.
Let us make a Ghostbusters movie.
Please.
And by us, I mean, let me hire the Always It's Sunny. It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, let us have the idea of making a Ghostbusters movie and then get other more talented, funnier people to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I get a chair. That's it. I get a chair on set, and I
yep, that's it. That's what I want.
Just go, you Rob, be. Can you do what you just did? But can you be 10% funnier?
Yeah,
thanks.
Solid direction.
Right. Anyway. Next time we'll talk about Star Trek. But
yeah, we promise.
Sorry, James. I know we're coming to like your favorite episode. this isn't what you wanted at all. But yeah.
All right. Well. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. The Captain Slog is performed by Mark O'Neill and Eddie Edwards. You can follow both of them on Twitter and Instagram. Mark's at RealMarkO'Neill and Eddie is at EdEdwardsComedy. If you like the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and now on YouTube at Captain Slog. And we have a Facebook page as well. Or if you really like what we do here, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CaptainSlog.